Did you know the FBI believes there are as many as 25 serial killers active at any given time? However, the Murder Accountability Project believes that number to be closer to 2,000. Welcome. I'm Jay.
I'm T.
We are Fatal Blend.
This is where we talk about two things we absolutely love: a little bit of coffee and a lot of true crime, specifically serial killers.
All right, so let's get into it today. Who are we talking about today? Actually, let's talk about what are we drinking today.
Okay, so...
And I say today because this is the first time we've recorded during the day and not at night.
It's true. And... we do drink coffee a lot at, you know, all times of the day, because coffee doesn't do anything but make me feel like I can function normally.
Hey, look, coffee's made out of water, so it's my water intake for the day, all right?
It's fair. Okay, so I am drinking today a 16-ounce iced Americano with two stevia and cream. Kind of boring, but...
And I'm going with a 20-ounce iced Americano with sugar-free vanilla syrup. Sugar-free or hazelnut syrup, for people who want to know, that's what makes French vanilla. And then, you know, my little bit of cream, which means a lot of cream.
Yes, and just to note that Jay is right. If you are somebody who really likes French vanilla, but you don't like, like the actual French vanilla that these companies put out, you can create your own French vanilla by taking vanilla and hazelnut, and you just put like... extra, I don't know, I don't know the, I guess 1-to-3 ratio. One, like if you were going to do like pumps of syrup, you do one pump of hazelnut with three pumps of vanilla, and it will make French vanilla.
Well, and I wanted to jump into, usually we talk about current affairs at this time and what's going on, but if we really want to talk about what's in the news right now, the NCAA tournament is crazy, and there's been a lot of focus on that lately. So it's been pretty exciting to watch. I'm glad to see the focus on the women's NCAA and all the focus and importance that is happening on there. Had some really exciting games. So just wanted to switch it up a little bit, kind of see what you think about that, and then we can dive into our cereal for today.
Well, and also... just a side note, we record these in like sections. So when you actually hear this, the NCAA tournament will actually be over and we'll actually know who the winner is by that point. But we're just talking about because it happened to us right now. So I just want to point that out. We're not bringing up old shit. We're actually talking about it in current time. You just won't hear it till later, but that's okay.
Yeah, we try to pre-record so we can be a little bit ahead of the curve to keep bringing these to you week by week, regardless of what happens in our week.
Yeah. And we're going to try to make sure, as of right now, we're going to be posting one every Thursday. That is going to change depending on, you know, if we see that there's maybe one day that is more people are looking for episodes, we'll change it. But right now it's every Thursday at some point in the day. I don't have a time.
All right. So with that being said, we can say happy Thursday, if it is Thursday, if you're listening to this as it dropped. If not, I hope everybody has a good
happy other day of the week.
Let's go ahead and get into it.
Okay. So we are going to talk about Donald Henry Gaskins. So Donald Gaskins has a lot of nicknames, probably some of the most nicknames I've seen on anybody that I've researched so far. So the main nickname he is known by is Pee-wee, and that's because since he was born, he was really tiny. So he was nicknamed Pee-wee. He also has been known as Junior Parrot, and that is because his mom's last name is Parrot. I know he has Gaskins for last name, but his mom's name is Parrot. He was also coined the meanest man in America, and he's also known as the redneck Charles Manson. That'll give you an idea.
That's a lot of nicknames and a lot of meanest man in America and the redneck Charles Manson, that definitely paints a picture you can look forward to yeah. for this conversation.
So he has murdered anywhere from 8 to over 100 or so, he claims. Because again, we know how these people work. They want to make themselves more relevant than they are. But actually, this story, as it goes on, you'll actually believe that he probably did kill over 100 people. His method of killing was stabbing. Most of his victims were stabbed. There were a few that were shot. Also, he would rape, sodomize, torture, mutilate, and even cannibalize some of his victims.
Just a super sick individual.
Yeah. Most of his victims are actually unnamed men and women, which again is kind of weird because most, I feel like a lot of the times, I won't say most, typically with serial killers, they have a type. They have, at least gender-wise, they have a type. This man didn't care if they were men or women. And at the time of his killings and his arrest and all the things, he was 5'5" and 130 pounds. And to be honest, he was a very mousely looking man. Like, I saw his picture. And again, our Instagram will have a picture of him, or does have a picture of him, when we post it. And also the cover for this is also going to have it. So the man that you see is this awesome Mr. Donald Gaskins. All right. So let's talk about his background. It is a doozy. So he was born March 13th, 1933 in Florence County, South Carolina. He was born to Yulee Parrott, which is his mother. She was an awful person. She had multiple children. She did not pay attention to any of her kids. There was a lot of neglect in the household. And she continued to have kids and not take care of them. Yeah, basically she was not the mother anybody would want, because she just didn't care about her kids at all. So much as, here's a great example of how stellar of a mom she was. When Donald was 1 year old, he actually drank a whole entire bottle of kerosene because she didn't pay attention to him. I don't even, the story around it, there's not a lot of detail, but my thought is, how does your 1 year old get a hold of a whole entire bottle of kerosene and drink it and you didn't even notice? Not, I mean, a whole bottle. And actually, it is believed that this incident caused him to have seizures until he was 3, because he didn't have any seizures until this incident. And then all of a sudden, he had multiple seizures for like years. And they
for a 1 year old, a bottle of kerosene, that's a lot of chemicals in your body. Like, that's going to mess anybody up.
Right. Growing up, he, of course, had a ton of older siblings. And because he was little, again, he grew to be 5'5" and 130 pounds, which if you think of a grown adult man, that's actually relatively small. And even though he was born in the 30s, that still was a relatively small full-grown man. So he was really small throughout childhood, and he would get picked on by his older siblings, leading to him being beat up multiple times by pretty much every single one of his older siblings. He also was physically abused by his mom's boyfriends and stepdads, because again, he has a bunch of siblings by different fathers. The mom, I don't know. It didn't say what she did. I'm not going to make an assumption. I just don't know what she did, but she had a lot of men coming in and out of her life. And those boyfriends or stepdads would physically abuse most of the kids. But again, Donald being small, he's an easy target to be picked on. Also, there were some reports of him being sexually abused by some of those men, but I did not find a ton of information on that. So there is that chance that is there too. And then he went to school. Once he was, you know, of school age, he started going to school. And again, he was picked on by pretty much all the kids in the school because he was very small for his age, which led to him fighting and getting in a lot of fights. So right now, you think about it, he was born to an awful person who didn't take care of him. He's physically abused by the mom's boyfriends, stepdads, whoever's in his life that's a male figure. He's beat up by his older siblings, and then he goes to school and gets beat up by his classmates. And he's picked on and he's made fun of like this whole time. So when he was 11, he dropped out of school because, well, nobody wants to live that life. So he dropped out of school and he found a garage, like a car place that he actually was able to work in. So he got a job. And while he was working there, he actually met two other boys named Danny and Marsh. And they decided to become friends because they also dropped out of school. And they also were just living the good life of 11-year-old boys that don't have to go to school. They started hanging out, doing some not so nice things, and they nicknamed themselves the Trouble Trio, and they considered themselves a gang. So the Trouble Trio gang. So the next few years, actually, he spent those times with his homeboys, just, you know, burglarizing homes and businesses, sexually attacking boys, especially younger boys, stealing cars. They would go and visit prostitutes regularly, and they are literally 11 and 12 years old. Okay, so.
Definitely not the life you should be living at that age.
Right. So at the age of 13, he's still out hanging with his homies, doing all the bad stuff. And the Trouble Trio gang actually raped Marsh's little sister. And they committed multiple robberies in this time frame. And Marsh's sister told on them. And the Trouble Trio was forced to break up because after his sister told, the parents beat the absolute shit out of the boys to where they were like bloodied and like in severe pain and forced them to all move away from each other.
Not saying that that's right, but it's a good thing that the trio got broke up because they were escalating what they were doing. And
oh, I would have beat the shit out of my own son.
I'm just saying. I'm not condoning, you know, abuse to children. But, you know, at the same time, whatever steps needed to be made to have them being broken up, I'm glad that they got told on. Yeah. and they got separated.
And I think in that situation, those kids were so honestly troubled. I don't like we're using the word troubled. So those kids were in such a lot of, they were getting into a lot of bad shit that just saying to them like, hey, don't hang out with each other, they would have still done it.
Yeah, no, that's not going to change it.
They literally
we were all kids once and we're going to be defiant if our parents tell us not to do something. We're going to be like, sure, and we're going to do it anyways.
Yeah. So here's something that's kind of sad. During that time, again, he's 13 years old. Gaskins actually went to court because of the multiple robberies. They got caught. And when they announce, you know, like when you're in court, they'll like call your name to have you come up and like whatever, not testify, but like talk to the judge or whatever. So they called, you know, Donald Henry Gaskins and his like court appointed attorney or whoever was there kind of like looked at him like, hello, because he's just sitting there. And that day he found out that his real name was Donald Henry Gaskins. He actually grew up thinking his name was Pee Wee.
Wow.
Because nobody ever called him anything other than Pee-wee.
Well, that's for the longest time our kids thought our names were Babe. Yep. Because we never used our real names.
Yep. When our daughter was like 4 or 5, we had asked her what our names was and she was like, well, you guys, you're both named Babe, because that's just all we called each other. We still call each other that. Okay. So anyways, Gaskins, out of the three trio shitheads, Gaskins was the one who obviously didn't move away because he had a terrible home life and didn't really have anywhere to go. So the other two boys, I don't know whatever happened to them. They went off, lived their life, did whatever. Gaskins continued to be a douche. So in 1946, so again, he's 13 years old. He was trying to rob somebody. He was robbing a house of somebody that he physically knew through an acquaintance or something. And the girl that he knew came home while he was in the middle of trying to rob this house. And she surprised him. So what does he do? He grabs an axe and hits her over the head with it.
Wouldn't be my first choice, but.
And she survived.
Well, thank God for that.
And she called the cops and turned him in. And in my mind, I'm like, you're kind of a badass. Because if he knows her and he's 13, my guess is she's around 13, 14 years old. So how, like, brave are you to survive an axe attack in your head and then still be willing to be like, yeah, I know that guy. Also, his name is Donald Gaskins and that's who it is. And then, yeah, because he was 13, He was sent to reform school on June 14th, 1946, which we all know how I feel about reform school. I think it does nothing but make people worse than what they are, because it's not built to actually help change anybody. And again, Donald, I don't know if he could be changed. While he was in his reform school, he claims that he was raped regularly by other inmates. Again, due to his size, he was picked on a lot. Through his own account, he actually has claimed that he ended up meeting the guy in the boy who was the boss of the reform school, which again, right there tells you this reform school is not doing anything for these boys. So yeah, so he found this kid who basically was the boss of the school and exchanged sexual favors with that boy for protection from everybody else. And he ended up escaping. He had multiple times that he tried to escape from the school, but he did end up escaping from the school. But while he was out running free, somehow, for some reason, he decided to return to the reform school to finish out his sentence, which, not trying to give this guy any credit, but why? why would you, if you had escaped and you were kind of doing your thing, why the hell would you go back there?
But at the same time, why are you doing all the things that you were doing anyway?
So, I mean, yes.
You know, it's kind of one of those things where he just wasn't in the right state of mind.
Yeah.
And so his decision making probably isn't the most valid decision making.
True. So he was released when he was 18. That was his actual sentence, was to basically, so from 13 to 18 is how long he was supposed to be in this reform school. And he was released in 1951. He ended up getting a job right after being released on a tobacco farm, and he would regularly steal crops to sell on the side to make extra money. He also would work out deals with local farmers to burn down their barns so that they could get insurance money, and then he'd take a cut of their insurance money. Finally, the farm he worked on, the daughter of the farmer actually questioned him about it, because she thought it was really weird that he would, one, she was kind of questioning that, like, the crops, it always felt like it always seemed like there was less crops than what she would think, and then these local farms would have their, you know, their barns burned down, and it was just weird because nothing like that was happening until he showed up. She asks him if he has any involvement, and he was like, boom, hits her in the head with a hammer and runs. Doesn't even respond. Just,
I guess that's one way to answer.
Think you're guilty.
Smash and go.
So he was actually arrested in 1953 for that attack, and he was convicted of attempted murder and sent to the South Carolina State Penitentiary for 6 years. But while he was in prison, of course, he was assaulted multiple times, again, due to his size, because he was little. But he was kind of sick and tired of it, so he took matters into his own hands and he killed a fellow inmate. Rumor has it that the inmate was sitting on the toilet and he slit his throat.
Wow. It's a shitty way to go.
That is true. His version was it was self-defense. Now, if the man was sitting on the toilet, I don't know how it was self-defense, but maybe he was one of the guys that was attacking him and he just took advantage of the vulnerability that man was in at that moment. After that, he gained a ton of power and control in the prisons, and no one messed with him anymore because he realized in that moment that he could become the aggressor. And that's what he did. He just basically stood up for himself. He had no problem killing you. He had no problem fighting you. So he was like, done. They did add 3 years to his sentence because of that murder, but they only added 3 years because he claimed it was self-defense. And some research said that it was the man who had raped him numerous times. So again, I could see it being self-defense. I can't. But again, he was on the toilet. So doesn't mean it wasn't unwarranted. It just means weird. So he escaped prison by actually writing in like the trash, like in one of the trash things that they push out to the garbage, like garbage trucks. He hid in one of those and then was dumped into the garbage truck and escaped.
Well, if he's taking advantage of being small, right? That's one way to get out. So everybody looks down on him, no pun intended, but everybody looks down on him for being small, take advantage of him. But now he took advantage of being small.
He did. But he's kind of dumb because he decided to go hide out in the Treble Trio's clubhouse. And that's where they found him.
Go back to what you know, I guess.
So he was taken back to prison. Here's what just gets me. He was paroled in 1961. So like he didn't even serve out his full sentence, I don't think. I think he was just given whatever. He got out in 1961. He was fine, whatever. 1963. He's arrested again for the rape of a 12-year-old girl. Unfortunately, he escaped before sentencing.
Of course.
But he was captured again. And he received 8 years in prison. But he only served five. Because, you know, in November 1968, he was paroled. And I do not understand why. This is a man who is now, since the age of 13, been in and out of reform school for raping a girl and multiple burglaries. Then he was sent to prison for trying to kill the farmer's daughter. He was sent to, a reform school for trying to kill the girl that walked in on his burglary. And then he killed a man in jail. And then he raped a 12-year-old girl. Why are we paroling him? Why are we not making him serve his full 8 years? I don't understand. At this point, he kind of feels like, listen, my only option here is to just kill the people I fuck with. Because every time I don't kill them, I go to jail. So in September of 1969, he's driving down the road and he sees this lady walking along the road, female hitchhiker. He picks her up. He beat her unconscious, raped her, sodomized her, tortured her, and killed her. He disposed of her body in a nearby swamp. Later, he was said to have told people that all he could think about was that he could do whatever he wanted to her because nobody knew that she was gone. Nobody knew anything about her missing. He also said that murder, at this murder in particular, was the kind of the turning point for whether or not he was going to kill. Because he said this was the murder that gave him a vision into helping heal his bothersome feelings that he has felt throughout life. So he had some bothersome feelings that he had felt throughout life. And he realized that those bothersome feelings didn't feel so bothersome after he killed her. From that point on, he would drive up and down the coast highways and pick up male and female hitchhikers. And he would torture them and murder them. And he would try to keep them alive for as long as possible to continue to torture them. Because the longer he tortured them, the less his bothersome feelings came into play. He actually called them the coastal kills. He did. He got pleasure from the kills, whether they were male or female. So he had zero. He didn't care. I would assume it was the act of the torturing and killing that gave him pleasure. So he didn't care if it was a girl or a boy. It generally took about 6 weeks between victims. So he would, and that's per him, he said. It normally would last about 6 weeks, and then he would start to get, the bothersome feelings would come back, and he'd get aches in his groin area, and he would get weird thoughts in his head, and his body would feel funny, so he'd know, oh, I gotta go kill again. So he'd go out, and he would find a hitchhiker along the coastal highway, do the same thing. Like I said, he tried to keep his victims alive as long as possible, because the more torture, the better. He would actually stab most of them. Some of them he would suffocate. He would mutilate them, and some of them he would cannibalize. And actually, in one story, he claims to have some of the people he cannibalized, because he's torturing them, he would cut pieces of them off and eat it in front of them, or cook it and have them eat it.
The very Hannibal Lecter.
That's who he should have been nicknamed, was the redneck Hannibal Lecter, not right. Charles Manson. But anyway, because Charles Manson didn't do that stuff. So Charles Manson, though, was crazy, which is where I think this comes in. So he claims that he has killed over 100 people along the coastline. I believe it. The more that we get into it. So November 1970, Gaskins actually starts killing people he knows. So first, his first victim that he knew was his 15-year-old niece, Janice Kirby, and her friend, 17-year-old Patricia Ann Alsbrook. He was interesting with how he killed them. He didn't do the whole torture thing. He tried to sexually assault them, but it didn't work. And his claim was that they made fun of him, and so he killed them because nobody makes fun of Pee Wee Gaskins.
Well, with that name, it's difficult.
So this created a category for himself that he called serious murders. So now he has split his murders in two. Per his words, one was the coastal murders and one was serious. Serious murders were people he knew that had wronged him in some way. So wronged him as in laughed at him.
Made fun of him.
Owed him money.
He'd been teased and taken advantage of his whole life.
Yes.
So a lot of regression and pent up.
Still not an excuse to kill people. People who owed him money, people who stole from him, or people who mocked him. And so what's funny is I found it interesting that he actually said laughed at him or mocked him. So he genuinely felt a difference between somebody who would make fun of him or somebody who would laugh at him, which in my mind, it's all the same thing, but not for him. And he would oftentimes, most of them, he would actually just shoot them. He wouldn't torture them. He wouldn't stab them. He wouldn't cannibalize them. He'd do nothing. He would literally shoot them.
Because this wasn't to curb the feelings that he was having. Yep, it was to right a wrong in his mind.
It was kind of like vengeance in his mind. He also has claimed that he was paid to kill people. He actually like hired himself out as a hitman. So now we've got a man who kills for pleasure, people he doesn't know, kills people he does know that he feels have wronged him in some way. And now he's also paid to kill people. And again, he doesn't care about any of it. One of the most gruesome murders he did was actually his neighbor and friend. Her name was Doreen Dempsey. She trusted him. She was one of the few people who actually thought that he was like a decent human. One day she was leaving, or she was trying to leave, and she was asking for a ride somewhere, or maybe he was asking for a ride. And because she trusted him, she was like, sure. And what he ended up doing was he ended up raping Doreen and killing her, did some not very nice things to her infant daughter, and killed her infant daughter too, and buried them together. And according to the police, this murder is the one, it was extremely gruesome. Like more than, I mean, again, these are people he knew and she didn't wrong him. So I am not really sure why he killed her. There's no explanation why he would have killed her or her daughter. But he did bury them together. He had his own personal graveyard that he would bury people in.
Well, with this many people, you got to put them somewhere.
All of the people he knew. Yeah. I think it was all the people that he knew. He basically buried them all in the same spot. Going back to him being a hired hitman, he was hired by a woman named Suzanne Kipper. Suzanne Kipper Owens. That's a weird middle name. Kipper. Okay. She hired him to kill her boyfriend, Silas Barnwell Yates. So this guy, John Powell, and this other guy, John Owens, were actually the ones who set up the meeting with Gaskins. They were the ones who helped exchange the money. They were the ones who actually watched. They came up with a plan that one of their girlfriends was actually going to kind of lure Silas to like wherever they were going to go. And so they had this other woman who was also, so it was the three of them and Gaskins, and they lured him to this place. Gaskin kills him. And so now you've got three witnesses. You've got four people who know that he was hired because Suzanne knows that she hired him. So in this whole entire death of Silas, there's five people who know all the things. The girlfriend that, I think her name was Deborah. She says, hey, let's use this to our advantage. Let's blackmail him. Let's ask him to give us $5,000 for us to keep our mouth shut. So they do. And Gaston's like, nah. And he kills him.
Not a good choice.
So he kills him. He kills all of them. So he literally killed.
You don't blackmail a hired hitman.
No.
I'm just saying.
No. So he basically killed anybody that knew he killed Mr. Yates. Then when he was, or later, he killed a girl named Kim Gilkins. She was 13 years old. She knew him. He knew her. He made sexual advances to her, and she rejected him, so he killed her.
As she should.
Fair. After that point, police started to become a little suspicious of Gaskins because what they knew about Kim was that she had actually been seen around town with him, and rumors had been going around that she was going on vacation with him somewhere. So when she ends up dead, the first person they think of is, there's this older man who was hanging around her. We should probably, you know, start keeping our eye on him. But during this time, Gaskins, because he had killed so many people, was starting to like run out of time and run out of ways to dispose of bodies. Actually, he had on the coastal killings, there was a van, like a little minivan that was pulled off to the side of the road that had three people in it. He went up to offer them help, but, you know, his help, by help, I mean he killed them, all three of them. And when that happened, he had actually reached out to, I'm assuming they met in prison, an ex-con named Walter Neely. And he was like, I need your help getting rid of these bodies, because he now has a van and three bodies. And again, normally he'd pick up hitchhikers, but he actually killed people where there's evidence that people were there. So I think he helped him get rid of the car, the bodies, all that stuff. He's reaching out to Walter Neely pretty regularly, like, hey, got another one. Got another one. Let's just, you want to help me? So Walter Neely started doing that. And as the cops are kind of honing in on like who they want to interview or whatever, they actually get a warrant to search Gaskins' house. Because again, at this point, they know that he was probably the last person she was seen with. So they go into his apartment and they find clothing and personal belongings of Kim in his apartment. And he actually was arrested and indicted for contributing to the delinquency of a minor. I'm sorry, I lied. I guess they didn't know she was dead at this point. That's correct. She was missing. That's right. So she was missing. And so this whole time they were trying to find out where she was. And when they found her stuff in his apartment, they actually thought that he might have helped her like run away. Walter Neely decides enough is enough. I'm going to just go talk to the cops. So he goes in and tells them everything, tells them about the people he personally knew that he killed, people, bodies that he had helped with, everything. So they ended up arresting Gaskins on November 14th, 1975. And he actually ended up confessing to all of it and showed the police on December 4th, 1975, where his personal cemetery was. In that personal cemetery, they found eight bodies, including Doreen Dempsey and her infant daughter, Robin. And so they charged him with eight counts of murder because, again, even though he may have confessed to over 100, there's no bodies. There's nothing, especially if he was dismembering them or tossing them in swamps, like you're not going to find that. But again, he had confessed. I still don't understand this whole thing. May 24th, 1976. So weirdly enough, like 6 months later, which normally takes years, he was found guilty on eight counts of murder. So they only took like 6 months to bring him to trial.
There's probably more than enough evidence between somebody telling on him, the graveyard, everything else they probably found in the house.
Well, and he confessed.
Yeah, and he confessed.
He did receive the death penalty. But it was commuted in November 1976 to a life sentence due to law changes in South Carolina. But that's not all. So now he's in prison for life. He was hired to kill a man named Rudolph Tyner while he was in prison. So Tyner was actually in prison for killing an elderly couple, and the couple's son hired Gaskin to kill him. He tried multiple times, but failed. And he tried by like poisoning him because Tyner was actually kept in solitary confinement. And so he would literally do everything he could. He'd try to poison his food, but he just couldn't get to it. He ended up coming up with a plan that it was like foolproof. So first of all, they still had him with, what's weird is in the penitentiary where he was still living technically on the death row, but they didn't have the death penalty anymore. So now he's just like in the death row area, but just not going to death row. He becomes friends with Tyner and starts to like gain trust with him. And he ends up handing him a walkie-talkie. And he's like, listen, use this when you want to talk to me, because we're, you know, we're both kind of like in these cells by ourselves and we can't yell to each other, but then, you know, at least we can have communication. And he was like, okay, yeah, cool, because they became friends. Well, he had rigged the walkie-talkie to explode. So
not gonna lie, it's pretty ingenious for being in jail and figuring this out.
So he actually, they found through phone records from the prison that he was, somebody on the outside had actually snuck in like all the stuff he needed. And he like literally was on the phone telling the person like, I need enough of, you know, explosive like C4 to like blow somebody's head off, is what he basically says. So he ends up rigging up this walkie-talkie and he calls him on the walkie-talkie. And Tyner takes it and puts it up to like his ear and head to like whisper into it and pushes the button and boom, kaboom, he explodes.
Wow.
And also weirdly, they have a picture of his cell. And I can't tell if it's after after he exploded or before, because it's real gross. And so I don't know if they were trying to point out that Tyner was just a really gross person, or if what they, because it's a black and white picture, or if the picture is what his cell looked like after he exploded. Funny enough for Gaskin, the death penalty had been reinstated in 1978. And fortunate for everybody else in the world, this happened after that. So he did receive the death penalty. And was given the way of death as the electric chair. So he did try multiple times to confess to a bunch of different murders in exchange for taking death penalty off the table. So he would literally say, like, I can tell you all these other people that I've killed, but I don't, you know, you can't give me the death penalty. Take that off the table. And basically they all said no. He's a coward because on the day that he was supposed to be executed, he slashed his wrists in his cell. And the prison guards, because they're fucking boss ass bitches, sent him to the wherever they send the prisoners when they're medical treatment, because they found him. And they stitched his ass back up so they could still put him in the electric chair. He had 20 stitches. Okay. And due to his suicide attempt, he was not given the luxury of having a last meal. They took that off the table because he spent time in the medical thing. So on September 6th, 1991, he was executed and pronounced dead at 1:10 a.m. And his final words were, I will let my lawyers do the talking. I am ready to go. That's the story of Donald Henry Gaskins. But let me tell you a couple little facts here. First of all, one of the creepiest facts is that this man drove a hearse. And he actually told his friends and neighbors that he has a hearse because he needed somewhere to carry the dead bodies. No one believed him. Nobody. But really, I think he probably did. Also, the locals were actually terrified of him because he was super creepy. And again, he was a mousy fucking little twerp of a man. So he just looked shitty. And so people, because of the stuff he talked about, and because he was very like, he was very open about dead bodies and this live bodies and killing, that people just thought he was a weirdo. And then also he did work with a man named Wilton Earle, who is an author, and he does have a book that's called The Final Truth. It was published in 1993, and it is his version of all the things that happened. That's Donald Gaskins for you. Here's my final thoughts on Donald. He is a horrific serial killer. He is the worst one that I have research to date. I truly think he's an evil person, and I really think that he was actually born a psychopath. This is where the nature versus nurture comes into play, and I understand he had a terrible childhood, but he just had like no, he had no problem with what he was doing. And when somebody says that the reason they killed people was because they had bothersome feelings that they were trying to deal with, and their only out was to kill people, and he didn't feel bad about any of it, and then to kill his neighbor and friend who did nothing to him, and to be able to kill your own niece because she laughed at you because you tried to sexually assault her, you're just, you know, you're just evil. He is legitimately what your nightmares are made of. He is legitimately the one that you're afraid is going to come into your life at some point.
listen, it's people like him that create trust issues.
Yeah.
You've got family members, you got friends, you got neighbors, you got random individual people. This is the type of person that creates trust issues. You can't trust people.
Well, and also let's get real. His name was Pee-wee. I'm not trusting nobody named Pee-wee anyways. There's reasons. So anyways, that is the story of Donald Pee-wee Gaskins. I really hope you enjoyed it. I actually really liked researching this one because he is, as I had Jay and I were talking about it earlier, he is the epitome of what you think a serial killer is. There was never going to be a time when somebody could like maybe potentially reason with him. He was going to kill you, and he liked to kill. He liked to. That was just it. He got enjoyment out of it.
Yeah. Creepy motherfucker. Let's just call it like that. And I did look up a picture of him. He is a peewee little motherfucker.
He is. That name fits him, but gosh.
Yeah, just if you look him up online, you'll see a lot of pictures, and he's just got this smirk on his face in most of the pictures, and just can truly understand how disturbed he was. Well, I want to thank you guys for joining us again this week. Appreciate everybody taking the time to listen, to learn, to see what we have to bring to the table, and enjoy these conversations with us. Don't forget to check out our Instagram. We will post pictures of each individual. And if we can find some more information, we'll try to add those to it as well. So check out our Instagram. It is fatal_blend at Instagram.
Yeah, just Instagram.
And it's FATAL_BLEND.
And we will post on there. That's when we will also post every time we have a new episode. There will be a picture or some sort of picture of who we're doing it on. And it will be posted the same time as it's released. So if you don't feel like following us on any of the, either our website, or if you like Spotify, like we're available on Spotify and like Podbean, iHeartRadio, you can also follow us on there, and that'll notify you when the new episodes come out.
Yeah, we'll definitely put a list on our Instagram of all the places you can check the podcast and you can share with friends. And, you know, the more the merrier. We love to do this. We love people to listen, and we look forward to it.
You all have made my dreams come true.
Absolutely. So next week, we're going to get into the life of Peter Lund, who is another very interesting serial killer as well. So we look forward to that, and we hope everybody has a great day, and we look forward to next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.